Another episode of the Motor City Metrics Podcast here at TigersMLReports.com. I am Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is Chris Brown, Mike Papchek, and Uber. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can find us, of course, also on iHeartMedia. There's all these platforms we're on. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't so already. And also, nice to leave us a review. Those go a long way as well. And I want to give, before we get into the start of the show and everything, I want to give a shout out to the Eat 'Em Up podcast over Alex and Jordan, formerly Podcastianos. Alex had Chris and I on the other day. It was a very, very good conversation. We went in depth with the minor league stuff, and those guys were really good. And it's weird to think that I've known Jordan now for as long as I've known you, Mike. I think like 6-7 years. So, fun fact, it was one of the first times we set up a live show. We're talking about that experience too. So plenty to get to, but also check out our friends over at Bet Online. It is number one source for all summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and the Stanley Cup. The finals are here. You have the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers, which is still weird to think about that in some way, shape, or form, but nevertheless. So all the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the team matchups, player props, and odds on every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. And so, and we did get a couple donations this week through our PayPal link. So thank you for, I'll say thank you to Brett, who was a regular donation. So keep up the good work. So we appreciate the feedback too. And we had a couple nice comments too on Facebook. But also, I want to give a giant middle finger to the Batitude team on Thursday night softball in Oak Park, Detroit Social. Okay. Let me tell you why. Let me explain this, ladies and gentlemen. When you play in a social beer league, okay, you should not have three players who play semi-pro softball, who play in tournament leagues, who can literally hit it wherever they want and out. You are a dick. You are you should not be playing. And seriously, tonight we played. Normally, when we lose, and that's fine. We're out there to have fun. I hate this team with a passion. This is the same team in the fall that I told you guys about before, that they're trailing by two in the playoffs. They called somebody because he was legally on the roster. They called somebody off the street, and this is one of those tournament player guys who can hit it whatever he wants, and a three-run bomb. And we lost in the playoffs. He didn't sit the bench at all. They literally called him in. And this is a team that also is like they're like the San Jose Sharks of the regular season. They do so well in the regular season, they always choke. So I hope you choke again next week in the playoffs. Seriously, Batitudes, if you're out there, I don't care. You know who I am. I'm the same guy who last at bat went to center. Okay, you know what they did? They had a guy play shallow. They had somebody play shallow, and then somebody behind him. I hit a bomb. Literally, almost. It was like one of the hardest hit balls they had all season. They had a backup center fielder. Their alignment was they played three outfielders on the line. Who does that? Rec league softball. You're up 14 to nothing.
They had you scouting, right?
Nothing. They had scouting. Like they've written out scouting reports before.
The advanced scouting, gotcha.
Get a clue, you stupid. I'm not even swearing because it's not worth it. I know it's just beer league softball.
So,
but I'm sorry.
Next year, what we're going to do is we're going to get in touch with Scott Harris. And if there are any Tigers who are on injury rehab, we're going to assign them to your team when they play. When you play Batitude, they're going to take them down.
I mean, I love Terry. Terry's an awesome guy. The umpire, fantastic dude. Fan of the podcast. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, you guys have connections. There are some people there who are down Christian. At Comerica every day, right?
Yeah.
I think next time you got to show up randomly. It's an off day, right?
Yeah.
Carpenter's not doing anything.
Yeah, you bring in, you like randomly, Riley Green has joined your team.
Yeah, well, Christian, by the way, Christian's on my team. Christian played a great third base today. He got hosed. He knows exactly what I'm talking about. Christian, my man, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. All right, I feel better. I've had a weird day anyway, but I feel better. I'm sorry. For anybody who plays rec sports, you understand how stupid this is. The optics of this. Is it weird I use that word today? Because I also came up in a different situation. The optics of you being up by 14 runs with guys who are on tournament teams. So, anyway. All right. Let's get into some baseball because there's some plenty of baseball going on. No.
Nick Roger brought his batitude.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
All right. Okay.
Cringe all you want. I'm proud of it.
That was good. So the Tigers, by the way, took 2 out of 3 from the Rangers. And there, I mean, we have a lot to get to. Spencer Torkelson went down. Yeah. Justin Henry Moy hit his first home run. His first hit was a home run. The Tigers were getting no hit by Jose Urena for some strange reason. And it was an interesting series against the Rangers, who are kind of a little bit beaten up, but the Tigers starting to get beat up too. So Alex Vaedo, another hip injury, I believe it's the same hip injury as before. He hits the IL after what, two pitches?
Yeah.
Maeda left. So
when we were on the air last week, did we know the extent of Carpenter? I forget.
We knew it was a back injury. I don't know if we knew it was the stress factor yet.
No, we didn't know it was a stress factor. Yeah. No, it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't that reveal. It was just saying he had some back issues. Yeah, a lot has happened, and the Tigers will plays a weekend series with the Brewers starting tomorrow night at Comerica Park. Speaking of Comerica Park, by the way, there was some news. Let's get into Tiger news, really. The Comerica Park is going to, in 2025, I believe it is, they're going to be announcing the Home Plate Club. So it's part of the premium seating experience for, it's going to be the most significant, as it was announced today, the most significant upgrades to the fan experience since the ballpark opened. So it'll be open. Construction will be taking place later in this year. And the essentially what they're going to be doing is it's going to be a 13,000 square foot space for fans seeking a high-end experience. It'll be built beneath the stands and located at service level between the two, featuring direct access to new premium seats that will be installed. The Tigers will move 409 behind home plate from dugout to dugout to at least insert 350 premium seats in the area, which will be in front of the new cross aisle. The upgrade seating behind home plate will be completed by the first game of next season, but the whole experience won't be ready until the summer. So about 520 to 550 people will have access to home plate club during the games. So the logo boxes, a 4-person mini suite, will provide semi-private game viewing experiences for fans located in front of Tiger Den, with privacy wall that encloses the seats for other fans. Fans sitting in these large boxes will have access to home plate club before and during the game. So the Tigers are also upgrading the visitors' waiting room and other clubhouse spaces. So all that from Evan Petzl this morning.
Is there any truth to the rumor that we're going to sponsor it and it's going to be the Motor City Metrics Home Plate Club?
That'd be awesome. There's a little bit of smoke. There's fire. There is a sponsor in the works that Chris has been working on. Oh. Yeah. But it's kind of funny.
If anybody out there needs a little testosterone.
Yeah.
We got, yeah. You know, it's funny. I saw that announcement today and every single comment below was about how the Tigers are tone deaf and how, instead of spending money on this, spend money on players. And it was like every other team, I think, has something like this, right? It's the equivalent, the modern equivalent of adding suites. They're trying to squeeze more revenue. They all do this. This is not, the Tigers aren't, secretly squeezing more money out of people. This is just, it's what you do when you're trying to get more revenue.
The plan is to make money with this, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But it is completely tone deaf because this is 1 week after we were told that they're not ready to spend money on players. So what I don't like is they're asking you to spend more money on them on seats that already existed when they're not willing to spend more money on you.
But they're doing this in 2025, and they haven't signed anybody for 2025 yet because it's not the 2025 off season yet. They're going to spend money at some point. I'm tired of the instant whiplash. Oh, Tigers, you know, go out and spend money right now. It's the middle of the season. They're not going to go sign somebody. And you know, they're announcing this. I don't care why. I don't know why they need to do it now instead of the off season. But it's getting super annoying to me as somebody who is like, sorry guys, they're not going to go out and spend $300 million on Cody Bellinger. They're not going to do it. A couple years ago, they spent a ton of money on Javi Baez, and now everybody wants to, you know, kick him off the team as soon as possible. You can't have it both ways. All right. Like they need to make better decisions when they're spending money, but they also need to improve the fan experience at the stadium in order to make more money. They have to do both. It's a business.
But they're improving such a small section of fans that are going to be able to afford to do something like that. I just think that that's why people get frustrated. And it's because those are the kinds of people that comment on Twitter too, or the kinds of people that can't afford to go to something like that. And I hear what you're saying. I'm not like the kind of person that's like, oh, they didn't spend money on the players. It's just more so like, why are you creating something that costs more money for an average fan that is going to be priced out already, who's already priced out of most sporting events? And so it doesn't mean anything to me. I'm just seeing, oh, they're spending money so other people can spend more money. Cool. You know, like it's the timing of it being so close to when he said it is, I think, why people are bringing that up. It's because that conversation was a week ago.
That's a bit of a fair point. I'll give you that. No question. But I will say this also. The people generally, by and large, unless you're splurging, the folks who are sitting in those sections right now, you know, probably are the ones who will be more likely to spend on these upgraded seats, right? The folks who are sitting out in the outfield probably wouldn't have been sitting back there anyway. But, you know, the thing is, you could break the argument that now the Tigers need to be aggressive, maybe a free agent signing, maybe trading for someone who has a decent salary in order to sell seats in that area. Okay. So maybe it is a good thing to upgrade. As Chris said, every team has this. I remember when the Yankees went to these premium seats. They used to have a daily night. They used to show it every day how empty they were, right?
Yeah.
For a long time. Then the Yankees got better, and all of a sudden those seats started to fill in. I know the Royals have really nice seats right behind home plate, and they're often half full. You know, every market's different, but I think that they charge enough for those things. They don't have to sell them out every night. They just have to sell a decent percentage of them every night, and they're making money on that, which is their whole idea behind it. You know, Detroit, for a long time, behind home plate, they had that equipment door, right? And they had that you saw the back of that security guy's head the whole game.
The Zamboni shoot.
Stupid. Okay. I mean, how did it take them this long to figure out, hey, we might want to sell that seat? You know, I mean, come on. So I think it's fine. I think it's a nothing burger. It's probably a 2-day controversy, and it, you know, goes away.
Yeah.
I think people are getting really cranked.
I had a buddy. My buddy is a shoe salesman, not Al Bundy style, like a little bit more fancy than that. And he drives all around the Midwest. And he was down in Cincinnati, and one of the guys who owns the store down there was like, "Hey, we're going to the Reds game," and took him in their second row behind home plate, just because he owns a store, and that's the people who buy seats like that. The businesses, they buy them, they send them to clients. It's suites but lower. And he said it was absolutely awesome down there. An incredible experience. They're bringing you food. They're bringing you drinks. You don't have to pay for anything. Like, it's already paid for. I get it. The average fan, that's not for them. It's not for any of us, honestly, unless anybody out there has a business that they want to tell us about. It's
and sponsor us.
What they give us is they give us new flat screen TVs after 20 years, right? Like, you know, they've made these small adjustments, we still don't quite understand. We were down there the other day. It's like, you know, they've done all these changes. Why haven't they updated the Tigers on top of the stadium? They're looking pretty washed out and old now. But I don't know. Like, I just get a little bit tired of the fans screaming for them to spend more money every time. Like every time they do anything, spend more money. And it's like, okay, we all want them to spend money on good players. I don't know. Maybe I'm complaining too, because that's all they're doing. You're just shouting into the void on Twitter.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I do think what YouTube users said in here is the timing is definitely the problem with it, because the team right now is, I mean, the team's over 500, so it's they're hanging around right now, but at the same time, you're getting some you're not getting is the production what they expected. And so, and I mean, the business, I mean, what Michael Mayer is saying is correct. These premium seats were something the Tigers have heard about from the fan base. There's feedback is pushing for this. And it's true, because you look at what's going on in LCA, that is a premium experience. I mean, that comparatively speaking to what it was at Joe Louis Arena. I mean, let's be fair here. The Tigers haven't really done anything quote unquote premium like this. I mean, Tiger Stadium, I mean, come on, you're pissing in a trough, for Christ's sakes. I mean, even when they were trying to do, when Mike Ilitch put money into that little mini mall thing of all those food places, that was just like, that's putting, you know, shoe polish on, or trying to put, like, you know, you're trying to polish a turd, you know, and like there was, Tiger Stadium needed some upgrades. I mean, as much as people did not want Tiger Stadium to go down, like, we all romanticize, nostalgia is a drug. We all love nostalgia. It stirs with us. And I think about my experiences at Tiger Stadium, and I love Tiger Stadium. At the same time, I think about the sticky floor, the trough bathrooms, the smell. Sometimes it smells like pee, or sometimes the views you get in right field.
Sometimes it smells like pee.
Yeah. That's baseball, always baby. Like come pee. On.
Yeah, I know. Like,
don't rip on the troughs. The troughs are awesome, man. I'm pro trough.
What? Okay, so, yeah, let's step up.
There's more people in there. You're not waiting as long? Come on.
No, man. Come on, man. I don't want to trigger some memories there, but it's like just the thing is, lipstick on a pig. That's a good way to put it. But Deadly Ninja Beats also said it best. The complaints will stop when you win. If the Tigers are winning, this would be a nothing burger. It doesn't really, some of the stuff is definitely, like, for example, when they were talking about some of the upgrades of the minor league, we talked about this with EM Up Tigers. The upgrade for the minor leaguers, stuff that was overdue, like 20 years overdue. The Tigers are way behind in a lot of different things. And so this is a prime example of that right there. Because there's Kansas City has even the White Sox have a little nice little suite area, and that stadium's a dump. Guaranteed Rate Field is a dump. I'm sorry, Comiskey 2 Field is a dump. That place sucks. So
And I think, yeah, that was Mike's point, I think, right, was the timing with the comments, and that I get that. That does make sense. It's just, they're a business. They want to make money. They're going to try to make money any way they can, and they're going to try to win without spending money. That's every business, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's what they're going to do. I mean, the comment of old BK, Youp is the first pro trough urinal person in history. That is 100% correct.
Less lines. You can get more guys on the trough line. I mean, just get them in there and get them out.
Even that line sounds weird, right? The trough line. Ugh. All right. Anyway, moving on. So yeah, the Tigers did, like I said, they took 2 out of 3 for the Rangers. They got some really good strong pitching. Bo Brisky went out there and threw 3 innings unexpectedly. We did host a live stream for that on the Minor League Report on Monday, and it went pretty well. We're going to do it again. So I think we're going to do it this time with the 4 of us at some point, and we'll plan ahead. So how we did the live stream was, we had a little score bug tool so we can keep stat. So during the game, and it looked like something like this. I think I still have it in our settings somewhere. It looked like this. Oops. Nope, never mind. I'll go back to our setup. Anyway,
Roger's just getting rid of all of us.
Yeah, no. So like that. So it was there's a little scoreboard thing right there, and Chris and I watched the game while with the fans and commenting during the game. And so somebody said we made a better addition than Todd Jones, and that was really nice to say. So, So anyway, and that was a good victory. I mean, against a team like the Rangers, who can hit the ball anytime. The strike zone was very inconsistent, though, Monday, that I noticed was one thing I took away. And then Tuesday, Tigers come back and get some, I think, really, to me, out of all the games in the road this year, Jack Flaherty comes out, does his thing, then he leaves the game with back tightness, and you're just like, We can't have nice things. We just can't have nice things. And then the bullpen did its thing, and it was able to hold on. And between Shelby Miller coming back, looking like the Shelby Miller the Tigers signed originally, and Jason Foley doing the job, but it was Zach McKinstry's game. I mean, I don't know where I was, but he had a, I think, you know, Chris, we're doing the podcast. He had a home run and a triple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Zach McKinstry, who has like just been struggling at the plate, comes out and does that. And this is why I love baseball, the unpredictability of it all. The rest of the lineup didn't really do much. It was just a very poor offensive game. And then Zach McKinstry carries the team to a victory. I don't get it.
Well, they had a little burst of power. You know, they had the three run. They had what? Green, McKinstry, and somebody else hit a home run that game. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, you know, Riley Green did. Green did.
Just Green and McKinstry. Those were the three runs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But at least they had a little bit of power in Texas. Those first two wins, that was nice to see.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things I was looking at when I watched the home run highlights, because as Raj mentioned, we were doing the Eat 'Em Up podcast at the time, Riley Green's home run and Zach McKinstry's home runs were almost identical in terms of they almost landed. They were like the exact same launch angle, and like they must have landed within like 4 seats of each other. I was like, wow, that's fun. I wonder how often that happens.
Well, you know, the Jake Rogers game was fun too. I mean, the two solo shots, you know, he made a nice play behind, you know, he was getting a lot of credit behind the plate for pitch framing, you know, depending on where your beliefs are on pitch framing. He certainly drew in a few calls that were interesting. So that was quite a night for Rogers. So it was good to see the second tier of the roster, or third tier with McKinstry, you know, carry them to a couple of victories. That's what a team's going to need who is losing guys like Kerry Carpenter.
Well, yeah, and it just shows you that when their pitching is on, that's all they need. They need one guy to hit a home run or two, right?
Yeah.
And that's how good their starting pitching has been. But unfortunately, you can see what happens, you know, in the third game, the Wednesday game. The bats go quiet, and sometimes that one home run isn't really going to do you much in the grand scheme of things. I mean, obviously, it's not fair. Catch my eye to pitch two pitches. You have an unexpected bullpen game, two pitches into a game. That's never, I mean, even if you win that game, that's going to be an ugly game. So I get that. But it just feels like, I feel like I say this at some point every show. It was just a perfect, that series is exactly what you can expect out of the Tigers. It's two hard-fought pitching wins and then just one terrible offensive
performance. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I it's tough to complain about winning a road series against the defending World Series champions, right? Even though they're a shell of what they can be with all their injuries, but yeah, that's a perfect encapsulation. It's they win these tight, close, you know, hard fought games, and then just it's a stinker across the board on yesterday. And as Raj touched on, it's like it's Jose Ureña, really? Like why him? Why is it these random guys who've, you know, washed in and out of baseball four or five times? And like, you understand when they get shut down by Paul Skeens, but I don't know. It's, and who was the second starter in the Boston, maybe it was the third starter in the Boston series. Just a guy. Like, I forgot his name.
Cooper and Criswell. Like,
yeah, I think so. Yeah. Cooper Criswell. That sounds right. Yeah. Like what's he doing? Come on.
But, reminds me of that. It was the guy in the AIDS organization, the former Michigan lefty, soft tossing lefty, Jeff Criswell, who always would like, West Michigan.
Jeff Criswell wasn't an organization, but he wasn't the soft tossing lefty. He was a right-handed pitcher, but in decent velocity. The soft tossing lefty was, we forgot that dude, the dude who was throwing like 82 and just completely annihilating Whitecaps hitters.
So, yeah. It's interesting. Yesterday, I was thinking that, you know, last year the Tigers were an unstoppable force when they had a bullpen game. The bullpen games were some of the greatest games of the year in 2023. This year, I don't get the sense that's going to be a case again. So when they put Wentz out there first, and then it's Katie bar the door after that.
Yeah, it's always tough when, you know, it's one thing if you like plan it and set it up for your bullpen game. It's another thing when the starter goes away after two pitches, you go, oh boy, I guess we got to throw Wentz out there. Wentz was just like not planning on doing anything. He's probably in his, like, you know, half hour of playing Tetris in the bullpen, and then So,
yeah, imagine him like playing like maybe some Dr. Mario or something, but then he got screwed there. But yeah, it was nevertheless a lot of unsung heroes, and they come into a series with the Brewers are playing really well, and I want to take a victory parade on something because here's the thing. So everybody who's listened to the podcast for a while now knows that at the Brewers are coming at 36-23, right? So they have a guy who played in third base right now who's got a WAR of almost 2, and the gentleman's name is Joey Ortiz. There's a guy who has been just leading the Brewer, like just he's got an OPS plus of 148. This is a guy who I really want the Tigers to go after in the offseason, or actually it's 2 years now. And I'm not doing a victory parade because I like a humble brag, but you guys know my love for Jordan Ortiz, and he's coming into town, and I'm definitely going to be, I have the house to myself this weekend for the first time in 13 years. I have, my wife is going to a Supernatural convention in Columbus. Yeah. For the Mike, I know you're laughing.
Right. The show or like the Supernatural, show. Like ghosts. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's a similar thing. Supernatural is, exactly what it is, what you just said. It's a show, but it's with two guys who are like the Winchesters, if you will. And she's going to a convention, so it's weird. So, but however, I mean, it's weird not because I'd be doing the same thing. I'm going to minor league baseball games, and if there's a, I'm not gonna lie, I would probably go to a Star Trek convention at some point, a Comic-Con. Or for that matter, Transformers convention. I would make no qualms about it. So for those who are not familiar with it, by the way, Stan, with the question of the week was, who is Deltron Zero? And our explanation, I have to clip that explanation that Chris gave about who Deltron
33.
Yeah, 33 was. But anyways, those are the Winchesters for anybody who gave a shit. So,
hey, is that one guy also in Prison Break?
I don't know. I've never watched that show.
I didn't watch that show either.
I know one of them is now the voice of Batman. He does a cartoon, the new voice of the Batman cartoon. So, but anywho, let's start our first segment and let's go inside the numbers. All right. So, Mike, what is your inside of numbers?
I got today the number 2.93. This is the difference in ERA between for the Tigers in the bullpen from March and April to May. It went up 2.93 between April and May. They had a bullpen ERA at 288 and 106.1 innings pitched, 1.1 whip, 96 strikeouts, 40 walks. In May, in 27 games, just 88.1 innings pitched. Your ERA is 5.81. That is obviously a huge – I feel like we were talking a lot about the bullpen as though it was like a surefire thing almost. We were just like, hey, it looks like they got this bullpen locked down. That's just not something we can assume going forward. Joey Wentz, I feel like he's just never really, he hasn't found it in a couple of years. Andrew Chafin is looking a lot worse this second time around than he did the first time around. They have legitimate issues in the bullpen, and Hinch's tinkering or not, it was an issue overall. So I am not worried, but I am cognizant of the bullpen, and I think that a lot of the Tigers' success kind of lies with how they do this month and every month the rest of the year.
All right, that's a good one. Youper, what is your inside number?
My inside the number is 1.07 and 78%. Those are numbers belonging to one Brian Wu of the Seattle Mariners. I don't know how much West Coast baseball you guys watch. I admittedly, and again, I won't talk fantasy baseball, it's boring, but Brian Wu's on my fantasy team, so that has led me to watch him where I maybe not otherwise have. What a fun guy to watch. Right now, his ERA is 1.07. He threw six shutout innings at the Oakland A's today and beat them. What's really fun to watch Brian Wu is he is dominating right now, throwing 80% fastballs. You know, that guy, he's going to go fastball. He throws about 12% sliders, and he dabbles with a changeup. But really, he's just firing fastballs at different quadrants. And it's got a little wiggle to it. It's amazing because he's not giving up much hard contact, part of the 80, you know, because he doesn't strike out guys either. He's only striking out about 18% of the batters. It's just the movement on his fastball is elite, I think. And nobody's squaring him up. I think he's given up four runs so far this year. Seattle's rotation is a killer. You know, if there's any I would trade Detroit's for, I would seriously look at Seattle's with Castillo and Bryce Miller, George Kirby, and Brian Wu. So that's one to keep an eye on. He's putting up some incredible numbers. We'll see how long he can keep it going. He has had a little bit of arm trouble here and there where he has to miss a start. So always got to be walking on eggshells with him.
Yeah, I saw something earlier today that Brian Wu has made like some sort of drastic change against left-handed hitters. I was just looking last year, he had a 394 weighted on base against left-handed hitters, nine home runs out of 180 batters faced.
Wow.
And this year, you know, not as many, but his wOBA against lefties is now down to 189. So that's an enormous change. I haven't dug into much to see what's going on there, but yeah, that's a good one. It is a guy that I don't think gets, there are a lot of pitchers this year are performing very well. A year ago, like, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
And he's one of them.
Yeah, remember how the Miami Dolphins had their no-name defense? Is that who was in the 70s? I can't remember. It was like that, something like that. Chris, what's your intended number?
Mine is 17. That is the number of times in the pitch tracking era, so since 2008, that a Major League Baseball hitter has homered on a pitch thrown at 101 miles per hour or harder. So basically once a year it happens. Now, it's probably more common over the last handful of years because there's just more people throwing super hard now. But I bring this up because last night, or I should say Wednesday night, Julio Rodriguez hit a home run against Mason Miller on a pitch that was 102.5 miles per hour. Right to dead center. And so I was looking, I'm like, man, that's gotta be close to the hardest. And it led me to some interesting information. It's actually tied for the third hardest pitch hit out for a home run ever, along with a Ben Joyce fastball behind two Aroldis Chapman pitches that are not, you know, that's not terribly surprising, right?
Yeah.
One of them was to like Devers? A 21 year old Rafael Devers. Yeah.
I remember that.
It was wild, right? But then I remember, the fifth hardest ever to go for a home run was hit by a Tigers player. And I think somebody here might remember, if not here, somebody in the chat will probably remember who it was and how what happened. But
Rick Reyes.
No.
What year was it?
2018. Somebody in the chat might, you know, I don't want to cause dead air here, but it was actually Jamer Candelario hit a two-run walk-off home run against then Cardinals closer Jordan Hicks on 102.1 mile an hour pitch.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you could see the highlight of that. It's kind of fun. And then you know what I did? I was like, well, this is fun, but what about the minors? Because you can now search minor league data too. It's far less extensive. It's basically AAA going back a couple of years and single A going back a couple of years.
2006, right?
Just for the minors, it's only for the last 3 years. Okay. And I found there were a handful of pitches, and the hardest pitch ever tracked hit. For a home run, also by a Tigers player.
Cole Keith.
Nope. Christian Santana. Last year, Christian Santana hit a home run off a Luis May pitch that was 103.2 miles per hour.
Wow.
Only pitch ever that's been a home run at 103 in the tracking era. I mean, obviously, again, they haven't tracked every pitch in the minors for the last few years, but that's what we've got, which is kind of wild and also kind of sad that Christian.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, thanks for standing up there with us. Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quintana is struggling in his third year in May at Lakeland and is nowhere to be found right now.
He's in a strange situation. He's in this limbo. So by the way, Matt Broder, who is in the chat of Woodward Sports, will be joining us for the draft show.
Oh, nice.
On Sunday.
You pressured him into it?
Pardon me?
You pressured him into it? I think what you're saying last
week. Oh, no. It was a guilt trip. Like, we ended up talking afterwards. He said that he didn't get a missed call, and understandably so. But Matt Broder will be joining us along with Scott Bentley. Scott Bentley, who is now, he would have the five-time jacket award, but he's done every draft show with us. So, yeah. Matt Broder, who played college ball at the University of Michigan as a soft tossing lefty. Good Lord, I cannot talk. And my former colleague over at Woodward Sports will be joining us along with Scott Bentley and myself and Chris. There's going to be maybe Pat Check there. I'm not sure, Pat, but are you going to be there for that? We'll talk about that. But
first, I'm here. We can talk about that.
Yeah. So Bentley does look like Bo Brisky, but it's still Bo Brisky. Still looks Inspector like Gadget. Inspector Gadget. I'm sorry. That could not go. That was one of the funniest things. Stan probably provided one of the funniest moments. So this is gonna be fun. So the draft show is gonna be fun. We're gonna be talking draft here shortly. We also have an article on Casey Mize coming out tomorrow from one of our interns, Colin. He did a really good job with that. So
yeah,
we're taking a minor report.
An interesting theory about Casey Mize, or not necessarily theory, but a suggestion about how to maybe get a little bit more out of him. And I saw the YouTube user asked if we can trust those minor league tracking data. I don't know. Maybe I was like, okay, this is kind of wild. Who's this Luis May guy? And I looked, and he has like 300 pitches thrown like 101 miles or harder. So I'll buy it. It's minor league data. Who knows?
Well, if it's anything like the Phillies data, like that feed we watch on YouTube, I think we could trust it a little bit, because that stuff is pretty, it seems like it comes out pretty accurately. So my inside number is a slash line, 304, 360, and 391 with an OPS of 751 in the month of May, and a bat pip of 452. And that would be one Jake Rogers. So that's how good Jake Rogers, like, it's been a quiet, when you look at the numbers, you're like, shout out to Jerry, because Jerry tweeted out the other day, and I ended up looking at the stats a little closer, and I was like, wow. And just, he has gone up. I mean, he didn't have any home runs, but he just put together a couple multi-hit games here and there, and just kind of consistency. So it's good to see, especially because the catching has been among the team rankings. Tigers have been among the worst ranked in terms of like offensive production from the catchers. Although Jake Rogers does a lot more defensively. Monday, his framing on Bo Brisky was chef's kiss. Like, he just took a lot of strikes. And that's the kind of difference that Jake Rogers makes over there behind the plate. So Yeah, that's our that's the inside and number for this week. Let's go into our next segment.
Hey, Raj, wait, just a second. I want to not to interrupt to keep the flow going, but I did. I another thing. You know, we asked about was it last week, 2 weeks ago, the idea of what a realistic Tarik Skubal extension would look like, and we had another question from the Discord from Jet 2. I don't know if Jet 2 watches or if he's you know what his name is here, but he had an interesting question. It was basically, you know, and with Spencer Torkelson back in Toledo, he said, how do you feel the Tigers approach first base this offseason with Tork still having a year of control left? It's an interesting question to me because, and we were trying to figure it out earlier, apparently Torkelson was on track to be a Super 2 player, so he would have had, the Tigers have control of him for the next four seasons, but if he had been a Super 2, if he had stayed up in the majors this entire year, it would be 4 years of arbitration. If he's down in Toledo for like a month, it's back to next year. He's not eligible for arbitration again. So it's a slight difference in money, but it's a difference. And it becomes a bigger difference in that fourth year of arbitration if he gets to it. So, yeah, I don't know if any of you guys saw that and thought about that, but what would your approach be to first base this offseason?
You know, first base is kind of one of those positions where teams, either they're doing it piecemeal with a bunch of guys, or they have that one slugger that they can plant there, and that's their steady first baseman, right? I think my personal opinion is they will continue with him if possible, first and foremost. And I think, though, that next year they will bring in somebody in that second tier to be available on the roster as a DH first baseman and have that ready to go as a fail safe. I would think.
I don't know. Mike, Raj, you got any thoughts?
So I'll go Cole Keith. I go Cole Keith at first base. And then what I would do is, well, here's what I would do. I would go put Jace Young at second. And then you shop, you know, you go for the Alex Bregman sweepstakes deal or third base or whatever you want to address third base. Haiyu Lee is now your future third baseman. We saw that tonight. We've been seeing that a little bit more. Haiyu Lee is an option down the line. I mean, you still have to see what he's been putting up some good numbers. I bring him up because he's been, I'm also working on a video on him too, but that's what I would do. Put Cole Keith at first, put Jace Young there. And then if you get something for Torkelson, if the route that the Tigers want to take, personally, I still think he's going to stick around. I still think they believe in him enough. But if honestly, if they're, because I see that happening. I see them going internal versus external, because externally speaking, what are you, your options are? I mean, I can't without looking at the free agent market or anything right now, I think the Tigers would just go eternally first and then knock out the problem that way. Jace Young is too short to play first. Not to say you can't have short first baseman or anything, but Cole Keith fits that size. And Mark Gourash mentioned this during the game. And ever since, and this is something that Chris, we've talked about this before, ever since the Arizona Fall League a few years ago, he has not been the same guy throwing the ball. Cole Keith, he's still doing a good job, don't get me wrong, but he isn't the same guy that we saw in West Michigan play third with a nicer arm. So that being said, I think it just makes sense for him to go to first base if that's the route they want to take. So that's just what I would do.
Yeah. Keith's, you know, you could track the arm strength or whatever on Baseball Savant. It's pretty low. It's about the same as Marcus Simeon's, but you know, whatever. Yeah, I agree. It's certainly the arm is not what it once was.
By the way, Corey mentioned that Vlad was playing some third at for the Jays. I did not see that.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, you know what? Look, if Vlad Guerrero Jr. came here and put the numbers up, he did. He does look now. I know there's a lot of people in Toronto think he's quote unquote underachieving based off his monster year. I'll take those numbers in a heartbeat. Thank you very much. I'll take a guy who can walk, who hits. I mean, his numbers at Comerica Park are ridiculous anyway. A guy who can hit the gaps. Trust me, if the Tigers, if he was even available. And again, we know that the Tigers don't do trades. It's just a fact right now. As of right now, they don't. But that's a guy who, had, man, if even if he was serviceable at third, I'd do it. I do it, and I would do it in a Toronto minute, because New York minute doesn't make any sense here. Whatever I got to do, whatever to get him here or something along those lines. You could have Jody, you know, you could have traded Jared Skubal for Joey Ortiz. Well, you know, but that wasn't going to happen anyways. So, Mike?
Yeah, Mike, did you have any thoughts about it?
I mean, I'm sure in the short term, I think we'll end up seeing Justin Henry and Malai play at least a couple games there. Don't really know where else they really expect him to play defensively. Kind of really tried him out a couple different places in the minors, and it just seems like if he's going to play, that might be where he ends up too. But I actually do think, with like what Roger's saying, I do think that they're actually going to stick with him. I think, again, just based on the way they've been approaching, and they Scott Harris has preached that they're going to give their young guys a lot of at-bats. I think that if he just holds steady, I see him coming back and at least having another chance next year too. So I just don't see him completely going away right now.
Yeah, and for my part, I would move on. I would try to trade Spencer Torkelson now. I don't see him having a year from now. He could have absolutely zero value whatsoever. Right now, there's still a little bit there, I think, but you're probably looking at a kind of a trade where you're moving your distressed asset to another organization for one of their distressed assets. Like, you know, I don't trade him to Miami for AJ Puck or something like that, you know, like just something. And either bring in a free agent first baseman. It's actually a very good class for free agent first baseman, if such a thing exists, right? There's Pete Alonso out there, Christian Walker, Anthony Rizzo might be available. Bellinger is going to be out there again. Who else? There's a couple. Reese Hoskins is going to be out there. Like, there are playable to good first basemen who are going to be in free agency. I don't think the Tigers are going to do that. I think I don't think they want to give up on Torkelson yet. I do because, you know, I to me, just to provide value at first base, you have to hit and hit a ton, right? And Torkelson certainly has the power. We've seen him. He did it, you know, 30 home runs, but he's never hit for average above a ball. And, you know, average, smaverage, whatever, like, it doesn't matter that much as long as you're walking a ton. But he also hasn't walked a ton since the minors.
That's the big one.
He's not walking a ton. He's a very bad defender at first base. All you're hanging your hat on is 30 home run power, right? Which is, you can get from Rowdy Tellez for, you know, a sandwich. And that's not a comment on his size. It's just the, you know, how much you have to pay. So I mean, you can hold out hope and cross your fingers that you're going to get him fixed and he's going to start hitting when he hasn't proven that he can. But for me, yeah, get something and move on. I think what they're going to do is, you know, tantamount to nothing. I think what they're going to do is start playing, as you guys have suggested, they're going to start trying anyone and everyone else at first base. They're going to give reps to Keith or Young or Malloy or Carpenter. Somebody in the Discord suggested Riley Green try first base because he's a big and lefty. You know, I think they're going to do that. And so that they'll have that optionality if Tork comes out and struggles again next year, that they can keep one of their young players playing, but now it's at first base instead of second base or third base or whatever. But that's me.
Yeah, it's just a triple decker sandwich. You know what? Look, if we're gonna talk about sandwiches here, triple decker or a Chicago beef sandwich, Italian beef sandwich. There we go. That's that. You know what? Look, if for Italian beef sandwich, because that actually sounds really good right now. I'm dead serious. No,
I can't believe you're gonna make me say it. A Cuban, the Cubano, man.
Well, okay. Look. Here's the thing. And I've made Cuban. Chris, did I ever make a Cuban sandwich for you?
I don't know if you made one, but I've definitely gotten a Cuban at restaurants with you.
Were you at my house at a Super Bowl a few years ago? What if someone invited you?
Not for the Super Bowl. I came out there once for Michigan versus Iowa in something. Okay. But
no, I've made Cubans, and I haven't made a Cuban in a while. It's long overdue. But you know what, Uper, as a native Cuban, you kind of get sick of the Cuban. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta change things up. You know, like.
I got
you. I love, like, you know, like, it's there's a thing for, like, I'm dead serious, for like a period of in my youth I had a bad Cuban sandwich when I was a kid, and I didn't eat ham for a decade because I got so sick from it. So a Cuban panini is elite.
Oh yeah.
So Tony's BLT, that's another good call. Who puts cheese on a BLT? All right, enough with the sandwich talk, because I'm starving. Like, it's, yeah, no, it's okay. No, because Now all I'm thinking about is tomorrow I'm going to Matt's Deli in Dearborn and I'm going to get myself a Reuben or a pastrami sandwich. So for those who are in the Dearborn area or who have not tried Matt's Deli, elite. That's elite. Like, that's grade 60, grade 70 food there. So